He served at the Pentagon as an Army JAG. He graduated from Notre Dame and has two law degrees from Boston University and Georgetown University. He's been practicing law for over 30 years. He's your family's personal attorney. It's time for the David Carrier Show.
Hello. What happened there? Hello and welcome to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. And you have found the place where we talk about estate planning, elder law, real estate, and business law. So give us a call, why don't you, at 888-463-2843. That's 888-463-2843. And we'll get your question, comment, or concern on the air. That's right. You can also drop us an email, david at davidcarrierlaw.com. That's david at davidcarrierlaw.com. Love to see you. Love to see the emails, love to get the emails, and maybe even answer some on the show. Who knows? We also like to see you at the Life Plan Workshop. Now, that's easy to do, easy to sign up for that. You just go to the website, davidcarrierlaw.com, and right there on davidcarrierlaw.com is the list of upcoming workshops and a place for you to sign up. If we could make it easier for you, of course, we would do that, but we don't know how. You can call. You can write. You can even send a snail mail. The address is the address is on the website. You know what we did one time? We actually, in the Yellow Pages, we included a postcard, free postcard. Send it back if you want to sign up for the Life Plan Workshop. Nobody did. 200,000 phone books out there, and nobody sent in the postcard. Okay, so that was a message. But, you know, a lot of folks do sign up on the website, and of course, we love to accommodate you in that way. So, if you have a question, comment, or concern about long-term care, if you're wondering about, you know, sometimes people get tabbed to be the personal representative, the executor of the estate, and wondering, well, what is my responsibility here? You know, do I have to pay these bills with my own money or that kind of thing? If you're in a situation like that, well, why don't you give us a call, 888-463-2843. It's both easier and more difficult than you think, actually, to do some of this stuff. You know, you don't have to stay up at midnight muttering incantations over the dock. You know, you don't have to have a cauldron and eye of Newton, toe of frog, and all the rest of that. You know, you don't have to do that. But there is a lot of stuff that you do have to do. And if you do it correctly, then things will work out. And if you don't, it won't. That's pretty much the. But you already knew that. I mean, that's pretty much the way of the. That's the way of the world. So give us a call if you'd like to. Remember that when we talk about the Medicaid stuff, all right? And Medicaid's very important. The reason Medicaid's very important for us, at least, is because that is how most people pay for the long-term care. That's how most people pay for. Long-term care, whether it's skilled nursing care, assisted living, in-home care, there's programs for all of this stuff that you may very well qualify for. And it's just how do we make sure that we don't impoverish you, we don't impoverish your spouse as we're getting those benefits. Here's a kind of a detailed one, but it gets to a number of these issues. One of these emails: how can we get Medicaid to pay for a nursing home for mom when she sold property and the money is gone? Mom's name was on some property that my brother owned. It was sold in 2010 for $12,500. After commissions were taken out, she gave the remaining proceeds of $11,300 or so to my brother that owned it. I'm lost at this point, okay? What does it mean that mom's name was on property that your brother owned? Does that mean she was a joint tenant or what? Brother took the money and probably spent some of it before he died in November of 11. My other brother, Daryl, took whatever money that was remaining that he found in the basement and did with it as he pleased. So I guess we had the closing. All the proceeds went to brother who died, who brother apparently put it in the basement. Another brother found it in the basement and blew it. Are we liable to pay back that money if he won't? We're really stuck here and we never received a dime of the money. I don't want to cause trouble in the family, but Mom needs to go to a Medicaid-paid nursing home because we cannot take of her anymore and cannot afford to pay for it ourselves. Well, here's the deal. Number one, you got to find out what was Mom's ownership interest. I mean, if it was just a matter of brother had, you know, was she a transfer on death beneficiary of the property? I mean, she'd have to sign off. Who put the money into it? Was it brother's property and he just gave it to Mom? Why was Mom's name on this property? How was this Mom's name on this property? Kind of confusing. Let's assume, you know, because we have to assume something. Let's just guess that brother had Mom on there as joint tenant with rights of survivor. Well, so there's only the two of them on there. There's only two. What that would mean is that Mom was entitled to half of the property, half of the proceeds. So we're not talking about $11,000. And, of course, you can always deduct the expenses of the sale. So now we're down to $5,500, not $11,000. But half of that, that would be attributable to Mom. Okay, so Mom's got $5,500, and she just gave it to brother. So that would be pretty clearly, if Mom was entitled to it, that would pretty clearly be a divestment. Now, the thing is, we may have put Mom's name on it just in case something happened to brother, so it would stay in the family, and it was just for convenience. But Medicaid doesn't really care about that. If you put it on there and you have legal ownership of the thing, which Mom would have, then she's going to be dinged for the $5,500, and she's going to be treated as if she had just given that away. Now, it was brother's house. Mom's name was on there just for whatever reason. You know, convenience, I guess, in case, well, he did die, so there you go. I mean, I guess that's what we're concerned about. And that's probably why he put Mom on there. So Mom said, well, hey, it's your house anyway. It's your money. But because he put Mom's name on the deed, because Mom signed off on the deed, and then Mom gave brother her half of the proceeds, that's going to be treated, most likely, is going to be treated as a divestment of the $5,500. Currently, what that means is, under current law, that she's going to have about a three-week penalty period, meaning that when she goes into the nursing home, if she needs skilled nursing care, for the first 3 weeks, Medicaid is not going to pay. Medicaid's not going to pay. They say, look, average cost of skilled nursing care is $7,631 a month, $7,631 a month, and you gave away $5,500. Well, with that $5,500, right, you would have bought 5/7 of a month of nursing home care, you know, about two-thirds, three-quarters of a month. So for that many days, we're not going to pay. After that, we'll pay. We'll pay, no problem. But we're not going to pay for that period of time. Now, it doesn't look like Mom has any money. You know, she doesn't, they're saying we don't have two nickels here, and, you know, are we liable to pay that money back if he won't? Well, you're not really liable to pay the money back. It's just that they'll impose a penalty period. And then the question is, how will Mom pay for that? Why would a nursing home take her into the nursing home if, you know, they're not being paid? And the answer is, well, if Mom goes to the hospital and then goes to the nursing home and rehab, right? Well, rehab will pay. Medicare will pay. And then when Mom's in, she just stays in. But you're going to have a tough time getting her admitted to a nursing home, okay? Tough time getting her admitted to a nursing home if this thing isn't taken care of. Because who would take him? Well, okay, you know, for two-thirds of the month, you're not paying and I'll never get paid. So the kids may have to step up at that point. You know, he also talks here about a Medicaid-paid nursing home as if that's something special. As a matter of fact, every nursing home takes Medicaid. There are exceptions most communities have at least one nursing home which will not take the Medicaid. But the vast majority of nursing homes do take the Medicaid because, frankly, there are very few people out there who can afford $7,631 a month. And, you know, and when it gets right down to it, it's closer to $8,000 to $10,000 a month. And that's why the Medicaid program is so necessary. That's why you know, getting qualified for it and staying on it is so important. You've been listening to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney, inviting you to a free life plan workshop. These are the workshops we do, well, when you need them, namely every week. Every week, when you decide, when your family situation gets to the point where you need one, we'll be there for you. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. Welcome back to the David Carrier Show, the show where the bumper music is better, where the bumper music is better than the show itself. Our claim to fame. Anyway, don't you love that stuff? That gets the red corpuscles jumping around, I'll tell you. At least for me. But where do we go? You know, where do you go from there? After John Philip Sousa, you know, is there anything left to be said? Not really. Not my opinion. But anyway, we're going to say, but we're still going to say it. Welcome back to the David Carrier Show. You're listening you found the place. You are listening to the David Carrier Show. You found the place where we talk about estate planning, elder law, real estate, and business law. So if you have a question, a comment, or concern about wills, trusts, or probate, now's the time to give us a shout, and we will get it on for you. Email us, david@davidcarrierlaw.com, or get on over to the website, davidcarrierlaw.com, and we'll sign you up for a free life plan workshop. Got some pretty good emails here. What is the difference between the statutory short-form power of attorney and a regular power of attorney? I have to get a power of attorney from my mother. I see that there's a statutory short form for power of attorney. Here's the thing, and it comes up time and time and time again. People say, well, I got a power of attorney. I got a health care power. I got an advance directive. I got a trust. I got a this. I got a that. And, you know, oh, I don't need that. I've already got it. You know, I've already done a power of attorney. The key here is that wills and trusts, that powers of attorney, that advance directives, deeds, all of these things, all of these documents that people do, right? The labels you stick on these documents, the labels that attach to these documents, are worthless. They don't tell you jack. They don't tell you diddly squat. They are not helpful. See, We see lots of trusts. I see lots of trusts. Lots of people bring in their trust documents, their powers of attorney, and all the rest of this stuff. And we say, well, you know, I've already got the power of attorney, and I've already got the this and the that, but I was interested in the other thing. And it's like, well, okay, wait a second. Time out. Understand that there are many, 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 there are an infinite variety, as many as snowflakes on Mount Everest, types of powers of attorney, okay? I have a general power of attorney. Thanks for nothing. You still haven't told me anything. Oh, I have a general durable power of attorney. Okay, still nothing, all right? Nothing meaningful, nothing that really distinguishes what you've got from anything else. The key to all of this, the thing that you have to do when you're looking at estate planning, when you're looking at elder law, when you're looking at this whole area of, you know, what happens if I'm not around, what you have to decide first and foremost is, what is it I'm trying to do? Why did I do this power of attorney? What do I want to happen? Okay, why did I do the trust in the first place? You can't do a trust because, you can't do a power of attorney, should not, all right, because, well, there was a guy on a radio who said I should do this. Right. Or, Susie at the office, she has one. And she said it worked great. Or so that is not a reason for doing it. You have to. What is it fundamentally that we're trying to accomplish? I want to make sure that if I'm incapacitated, right, that my bills get paid, the snow gets plowed, and the grass gets cut. OK, is that your idea? Well, I got to tell you, from most of the powers of attorney that I review, that's exactly what's going on. I just want to make sure that if I'm not there to cut the grass, someone's going to do it and pay my bills and all the rest of this. And here's the problem with that. You know, and this is, gets into this, do I need a short form power or regular power of attorney? What the heck does that mean, regular power of attorney? Like, there is such a thing. There is no such thing. It's all guided by what it was you thought you were doing. And the vast majority, again, you know, it's kind of interesting in this area because so much of what gets done is wasted motion, is wasted effort, okay? My opinion. That's my, well, like, who else's opinion did you think I was going to have, right? Well, that's my opinion. I mean, I look at these documents and say, what were you thinking? Well, I'll tell you what you were thinking. You were thinking that I want to make sure the grass gets cut if I'm not around to cut it. And I want to make sure the snow gets plowed, and I want to make sure my lights stay on and all the rest. Yeah, but it's, you know what? You know what? If you're not around to cut the grass, that means that something big happened, something huge, something enormous, something that has never happened before. What is that big, huge, enormous thing that you're ignoring? The big, huge, enormous thing that you're ignoring, that most powers of attorney that we see, you're just ignoring, is the fact that you are not mentally competent anymore. You're not able to do this for yourself. Do you think that the problem is that the grass gets too long? Huh? Come on. The purpose, my opinion, who else's did you want me to have? What? Is that the reason you do the power of attorney, the reason for doing these parts. Yeah, I want to keep the grass cut. Yeah, I want to keep the snow plowed. Yeah, I don't want to default on my bills. I get all that. And yes, of course, we're going to do that, right? But that's not really the point. The point is, how do I respond to the world that has changed? The world is radically different than it was before. The radical difference is you're not able to make decisions for yourself anymore. If you're in that world, it looks different than the world you're in now. The judgment calls that you make now, you can't make then, okay? And the judgment calls are so much more important at that time, all right? You know, what doctor am I going to use? Am I going to sell the house? Am I going to do this? Am I going to do that? Am I going to qualify for benefits? Am I not going to qualify for? Am I going to try to provide for my spouse? There many, many questions come up, and most powers of attorney are like, I don't know, you can't do that, you can't change this, you can't change that. Because it's all about cutting the grass. It's all about, well, any, you know, continue every program that I was doing before. Wait a second. Why would you want to continue the programs that you were doing before? You're not competent now. Okay? Why don't we address the big issue, which is how do we make sure that you're okay instead of all the rest of this stuff? So when somebody says, you know, regular power, listen, there is no regular power of attorney. Okay? Oh, this is the standard power of attorney. There is no standard power of attorney. You first have to ask, what is this all about? What am I trying to accomplish? And then make sure that whatever documents it is that you have are directed at that goal. You've been listening to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. Welcome back to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. This is the place where we talk about estate planning, elder law, real estate, and business law. You know, when I was at the Pentagon, I was in D.C. for almost 6 years. Anyway, while we were there, you know, they have parades. There's parade season, right? I had a little patch on Constitution Avenue, between the Washington Monument and the White House, you know, right there. And you just go down there, like, not every weekend, but most weekends. And it was so cool because they would come up, you know, you'd have the White House in the background, depending on which side of the street you wanted to be on. Usually I would be on the Washington Monument side, which means, you know, you sort of have the White House, and then the bands would come by, you know, with the bam, 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 bam. Just wonderful. Wonderful stuff. Love those. Love John Philip Sousa. you know what the biggest... Here's a little trivia for you. Do you know what the biggest parade in Washington, D.C. is? The biggest. By a factor of 3 or 4. The biggest parade. It's the Maryland School Crossing Guards Parade. It's the kickoff. Usually it's one of the very first parades. And apparently they started doing it for the crossing guards, right? Maryland School Crossing Guards. Well, it has ballooned into this thing where you get every school sends its band. And it's just, it goes on all day. You just can't believe, you know, the marshaling. I went one time, went walked back through the, and usually the marshaling area, you know, where you start to walk down Constitution Avenue down by the Capitol. Well, you know, yeah, there's a little bit, you know, obviously quite a bit of the floats and this and that going on. Nothing to compare to the Maryland School Crossing Guards parade. Band after band after, and of course, the thing is, you've got the parents in each school band, right? Follow the band down the street. They don't follow it. They kind of precede it, okay? So you got all these moms out there with the cameras in front of the band. Are you with me on that? It's the most amazing thing you've ever seen. It's like the band fills up the street, and then in front of the band are all the moms yelling encouragement to their kids. And they've got the, you know, three, most of them, not all of them, but most of them had like three drum majors in the front, you know, high-stepping and the whole nine. Just, you got it. Find out, if you're ever going to D.C., if you ever think, hey, you know, wouldn't it be fun to go to the nation's capital and take in the nation's capital, blah, blah, blah. 4th of July, yeah, that's a lot of fun. There's no question. Veterans Day, the whole bit, all good. But if you can coordinate your schedule so that you're there for the Maryland School Crossing Guards Parade, okay, which is at the beginning, as I remember, it's at the beginning of the, I have to look this up and make sure I'm remembering this correctly, but I believe it's at the beginning of the season. It is just amazing. I mean, there's nothing like it. There's nothing like it in terms of how intense everybody is about it. You know, and the thing that has always got me is moms. I was going to say parents. I was going to be politically correct and say it was the parents in front of the. It wasn't the parents. It was moms. The moms out in front, you know, yelling encouragement, taking the pictures all the way down Constitution Avenue. It wasn't like they just, you know, they jump out, take a picture, jump back. No, sir. They did the whole parade route backwards, you know, because they just, it's just amazing stuff. Anyway, if you want to talk about parades, now's the time. Let's see. You know what I did one time, actually, for the 4th of July? I staked out my territory with little American flags. And because we had some friends that were going to come down and watch the parade as well. And we had this big patch on right across from the White House, you know, that was staked out with these little American flags. And sure, and everybody honored them. You know what I mean? It's a very nice crowd. Very, very. And I didn't, you know, it wasn't an acre and a half that I was staking out. It was just a little spot. But people were cool about it. You know, it was. Kind of reminds you of the Tulip Time Parade over in Holland, you know, where people put out their lawn chairs and blankets and stuff, you know, what is it, 3 weeks in advance, I think, that they put those out. And people respect it. You know, they're like, yeah, okay, yeah, you were there first, no problem. So there you go. If you have a question, comment, or concern about parades, brass bands, or John Philip Sousa, give us a call at 888-463-2843. That's 888-463-2843. And we'll get your question, comment, or concern on the air. In the meantime, we're going to hit a few more of these emails. This one is a very common situation that comes up. Question, what are the best long-term care options for my father-in-law who's suffering from Alzheimer's? My in-laws, both alive, owned a home, but do not have the liquidity to pay for long-term care or home health aid. We need to know the best options available. Question, is transferring the home to one of the kids the right option? No! Well, that answered that one. How long is the look-back period to make them eligible for Medicaid to cover expenses? 60 months, 5 years. His dementia is already moderate, so we need immediate help. I believe that. He's living at home, but we do not have outside help. It's beginning to take a toll on my mother-in-law. Interesting fact, okay? 43% of caregivers, according to the New York Times, are men. 43% of caregivers are men. That means what? It means 57% are women. So in this case, taking a toll on mother-in-law. Question, how often does the caregiver spouse die first? How often does the caregiver spouse die first? You know, I've always heard two-thirds. I just saw another thing said 62%. Well, close enough, okay? The caregiver spouse usually dies first. 62% of the time was the most recent number. I've seen higher numbers than that. You know, surveys are like hats, you know, which one do you like? But, you know, it's up there is the point. Like two-thirds of the time is what I say. That's how I shorthand it. Two-thirds of the time the caregiver dies first because they kill themselves keeping the other one out of the nursing home, right? You got to get over that. Now, they own a home. Got it. Dementia's moderate, so we need immediate help. Yes. Living at home, no outside help. Taking a toll on mother-in-law. It's going to kill your mother-in-law. All right? You got a two-thirds chance of it killing her. We need to know how to evaluate all the options, pick the best option to care for both my family members. Well, right now, we don't know. You know, he's got Alzheimer's, and it's moderate. Does he know who he is? Does he know where he is? I don't know what moderate means. Maybe he's able to execute documents at this point. Maybe he's not. You know, we don't know the answer to that question. But one of the things that let's assume he is. Let's assume that we can still do the planning. The ideal plan here, let's assume that we don't need the Medicaid just yet. We don't need a residential program just yet. But what mom has got to do, what his mom has got to do, is she's got to get all the assets in her name. Assuming she's healthy, right? We put all the assets in mom's name. Now, that's not a divestment. There's no five-year look back on that because transfers between spouses, mom to dad, dad to mom, whichever, are not divestment. Doesn't matter if you transfer between your spouse, between you and your spouse, okay? So that's number one. Then number two, we have to assume that mom will die first. Why do we have to assume that? Well, we don't have to, but if we do, there are some planning opportunities. You know, earlier in the show, I said there's one time when we will always go through probate. This is it. When we have one spouse who's in long-term care, nursing home care, right, needs the Medicaid, and the other spouse is at home, is, you know, pretty healthy and all the rest. If that at-home spouse dies first, we always go through probate. Always, always, always. Because why? Because that's the only way we can preserve the assets for the one in the nursing home. Are you with me on this? Nothing else works. Nothing else will preserve the liquid assets, the financial assets, the real property, whatever else it is. Nothing else will preserve those assets for the benefit of the one in the nursing home on the Medicaid unless we go through probate. That's an all 50 states deal. Okay, because that's the federal law. So there's stuff that needs to be done quickly here. Some basic stuff, you know, you need to take account of that. And then there are other things that can be done to preserve assets for mom and get dad the help he needs. You're listening to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, inviting you to one of our free life plan workshops. We talk about exactly this sort of issue at the life plan workshop. I'll give you some examples, actually. On just how this stuff works. 888-463-2843. 888-GO-DAVID. That's the number to call. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. Welcome back to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. You have found the place where we talk about estate planning, elder law, real estate, and business law. So give us a call, why don't you? And we'll get your question, comment, or concern on the air. We're talking about a situation where we've got one spouse who has received the diagnosed with long-term care with Alzheimer's, dementia. And the question is, what do we do with the house? They don't have according to the email, they don't have the money to pay for long-term care or for home health. And the answer is that if you've got somebody, you know, a spouse who needs assistance, who needs help, there are actually several programs, three that I can think of, that are their Medicaid programs that are available to help. Now, the first thing to do fundamentally is let's guard against the downside. What's the downside? Downside is that mother-in-law dies first. This is the in-laws. But the mother-in-law dies first, mom dies first, and then dad gets the house. Now dad needs the nursing home. Now the house goes, right, pretty much to pay for the nursing home. Well, if we keep it in mom's name, that's not going to happen. And it doesn't matter that it's a mom, dad's, or mom and dad's name. Still an exempt asset. But then if mom dies first, now the asset is in trust. Got to go through probate to do this. Got to go through probate to do this. But when you do it, now it's going to be protected for dad. So that's fundamental. That's like the first step that we would do. We've got Bruce on the line. Good morning, Bruce. Welcome to the David Carrier Show.
Hey, how you doing?
Perking and working, man. Having a ball. What's up?
Oh, I just turned the radio on, and I got a question. My dad is...
Wait a second. Wait. I've been on the air for the last hour and 45 minutes, and you just turned it on? Bruce,
well,
you got some explaining to do.
I'll have to set my alarm.
Yes, very good. That's the spirit we like to see. Go ahead, how can I help?
Well, my dad's 92, his wife is 92. He's been married to this woman 12 years.
All right.
And they both live in a nursing home, non-assisted. But I was wondering, my dad has some money. This woman, he had to have filed bankruptcy because she was so far in debt before he married her. But if she had to go in the nursing home, would he be responsible to pay for her?
Pretty much. I mean, if he doesn't sign, here's the deal. If he doesn't sign off, if he doesn't guarantee the payments, he's not going to be personally liable. But the thing is, the Medicaid, the way they look at the Medicaid, it doesn't matter how long you've been married, 12 years, 12 minutes, all the assets together count. Now, there are ways to preserve dad's asset. Give me a ballpark on what we're talking about here.
Around 250 he has. I mean, nothing is in her name.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because the nursing home's got to get paid. Okay? So they're going to come after your dad. They're going to sue somebody, going to sue her, and the question is, does dad want his wife not to have her bills paid? The good news is that there is a way to preserve. See, dad would be allowed to keep about $115,000 anyway. That's his protected amount. The rest would have to go to the nursing home. But hang on, not done yet.
Okay, I'm listening.
there are a couple of techniques that we use to hang on to the rest of the money for dad. Now, when we set these things up, the money comes back to dad over his life expectancy. But the fact she's not in the nursing home now, is she?
No, they're both. But basically, he's taking care of her, and his health is failing, or he's not going to be able to do this any longer.
Well, you know, that's what your dad's one of the 43% of guys that are taking care of their spouses. You know, it's not as lopsided as it used to be. And go ahead.
She has dementia. You know, he has to give her medication. He fixes her meals and basically, you know, tells her what time of the day it is and what day of the week, because she can't take care of herself.
Gotcha. Well, here's the good news. The good news is that whether she stays at home, whether she needs, the actual skilled nursing care, you know, the nursing home type stuff, there are a number of programs out there that she might be eligible for, and it is possible to get her qualified for the Medicaid. Now, understand, it's Medicaid that pays for this stuff, not Medicare. All right, it's not a Medicare thing; it's a Medicaid thing, and the Medicaid will pay for. There's one program, for example, called PACE, Program of All-Inclusive Care for the Elderly, which might work very well in this situation. It's a program where somebody would be eligible, it sounds like she would be, under the criteria for skilled nursing care, for nursing home type care. But PACE, Program of All-Inclusive Care for the Elderly, that's how the PACE, right? That's how they get it, will come to your house up to 5 days a week, pick you up, take you to the senior center, we'll take you to your doctor's appointments, we'll take you to your the pharmacy. You know, they've got all the services are included in this, and it doesn't cost anything if you qualify for the Medicaid. Now, understand that Medicaid is the way that most everybody pays for this kind of care, pays for long-term care. And so the question is, do we have to spend that down? Does he have to spend $150,000 before he qualifies? The answer is, no, he doesn't. The answer is that his money can be preserved for his use, for her use, you know, if he wants to spend on her to buy the extras, which is sort of what I favor. You know, I figure it wasn't easy for dad to earn this money in the first place. He's 92 years old, for crying out loud. That tells you something. What it tells you is your dad is the kind of guy who wants a nest egg, the kind of guy who wants to preserve what he's got so that his choices matter. That's what it says to me. And this is the way we do it. Which option we take, that just depends. So what I would, you know, excuse me, whether
he doesn't.
Go ahead.
You mean his money is all liquid, more or less, because he doesn't own a home anymore, and
right.
Outside he does own a van as far as the only thing, vehicle, and
uh-huh.
His furniture, that's the only thing he has, and he pays rent every month. Well, I write a check for that every month. But,
well, here's what I would suggest. What I would suggest is that you call the office, 888-463-2843. You know, talk to a live, do it tomorrow morning. Call a live, you know, talk to one of the intake specialists. And, you know, we'll get you, you know, describe the situation that you talked to me on the show. And we'll, you know, get it going. I mean, you just have too many options to, you know, one of the things we say about the show, it's a lively legal discussion, but not legal advice.
Yeah.
You know, are there things that can be done? Yes. Does that have to be impoverished? No. Can we preserve pretty much all of what he's got? Yeah. Yeah, we can. Those are all things that can be done. But when it comes to which techniques are we going to use and how exactly go about it and which program would be appropriate for her, that's really a one-on-one discussion to have, and that's what I'm inviting you to.
Oh, okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Because, you know, it's got to the point now where he, like I said, he can't take care of her physically anymore. I mean, she needs help. He's been giving her a bath, and he can't do that stuff anymore.
That's why you got to call tomorrow morning, right? Tomorrow morning,
yeah.
You give us a shout. There are very good things that can be done, and quickly,
okay.
Too. Okay? Thank you, Bruce.
All right.
Thanks for calling.
All right. Have a good day.
Thank you. You too. You've been listening to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney, inviting you to a free life plan workshop. Or just give us a call at 888-463-2843.